Well, hey there, Sugar. This here is Rogue, and you are listening to Comics in Motion.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Examining X-Men 97, where we're looking at episode 4 of the series entitled Motendo/Life Death Part 1. I'm one of your regular co-hosts, Max. Hope you're okay out there. And I'm joined, as ever, by my other regular co-host and a special guest, but I'll let my co-host tell you all about that. He is, of course, the extraordinary, exponentially exquisite Spider Dan. Dan, how are you, sir?
I'm all the adjectives. I'm always am, Max. Thank you very much for introducing me as wonderfully as you always do. I'm very good. I'm very excited to talk about this episode. An interesting one, I think, this week, and we have lots and lots to discuss. But you are right. We have finally expanded our roster of people on the podcast. Our own merry band of mutants has grown by one more. We've tried it a couple of times and we failed, but this time we have grown. And we are here to give you a goddess of the podcasting community, one of our very own. And not only that, my first Comics in Motion co-host when we did She-Hulk podcast at large, which is all available on my website. If you want to go have a look, I'll leave a link and you can listen to all of them. And of course, they're all brilliant because it's me and it is our guest today, Tonya Todd. Welcome to Examining X-Men 97, Tonya. How are you?
Meow. That was an exceptional intro, both of you.
We're well practiced. We're well versed at this by now.
Yes. So it's really lovely to meet you, Max, and it's always good to see you, Dan.
Very good. Well, Tonya, you're here finally, and I'm so glad that you made it, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this episode. But I want to know, and Max as well, of course, wants to know, what is your connection to X-Men? Did you read the comics? Were you more familiar with the animated series? What do they mean to you as characters, as an allegory, as many other things? And then how have you found X-Men 97 so far?
Oh, that is a lot. I will do my best. So I came to X-Men very late. It was definitely not one of the first comics that interested me. I just didn't know about them that much. And it seemed like the people who were interested in X-Men, just in my experience, the ones that I knew were so obsessed with it that it seemed like, oh, this is one of those creepy guy things. Like, it, you know, and then you look at the pictures and the women are all very busty with tiny waists and just, yeah, nobody looks like that. So I thought, this is just comic porn without ever reading the stories. And then in particular, I had this one friend who used to tell me, you look like Storm. And it bothered me. Like, it really bothered me. It's like, I don't know who this Storm person is. We don't all look alike. Like, just quit saying that I look like her. And he thought that this was some kind of compliment. And then eventually, I ended up watching an episode of the series. Before I read any comics, I watched an episode of the series. And it was, oh, wow, she's kind of awesome, you know? All right, well, maybe I'll give this a try. And maybe he was just being nice and not being a creepy, you know, it was someone from my D&D circle, you know?
Okay.
And I loved it. It was so clear to me that this was definitely a metaphor for civil rights, in particular, the homosexual movement. And you could see it not just that, but very, very, very much that, in the sense that you can't help the way that you're born. We're just like this. And we're also human. Like, just because we are different from you doesn't mean that we should be ostracized. And the, I guess the activist in me that I didn't even know was there yet, fell in love with it. So of course I started reading some things, and over, you know, I can't say that I read it the way I should have. It would be, you know, a comic here, a comic there. It wasn't like I read an entire arc. I'm sure I did at some point, but it just didn't, that's just not the way it was introduced to me. So when I finally got into it, it's like, oh, I want to read this. Oh, I want to read about this. And mostly I was reading about Storm. She's my favorite.
Yes, one of mine as well, if not top three, five. I genuinely think she's one of the best female characters in comics, like above so many others. She's always been.
The funny thing is, I don't really identify with her powers. It's like I've never wanted those powers specifically. And you know how there's this sense of, you know what your power would be if someone just struck you with a wand and whatever it was came out without you having to think about it, whatever it would be. I know that my powers would be telekinesis with telepathy and the power to communicate with cats. Like, I know those would be my powers. That has nothing to do with Storm's X-Men, her mutant power, but her personality is far more in line with who I am than Jean Grey ever will be.
No, I can definitely see that. I can see the connections there, definitely. So you've kind of cherry-picked the show, you cherry-picked the comics, but yeah. I imagine this show you've watched from the very first episode, I would like to think.
Yes, and it's funny because I didn't even know that this version was coming out, and I just happened to be rewatching all of the original episodes. It just, you know, I like the theme song. It's been a while since I watched them. And I like to watch cartoons in general while I'm eating because nobody pukes on them. Like, really, that's the reason. it's awful when you're watching some show and then you have a moment like that while you're eating. It's like, well, now my meal is ruined. So I have established this habit for years. I went through the Clone Wars doing that. It's like, okay, what's going to be my meal show? And I did X-Men and I just finished that maybe a month or so ago. And hey, look where we are. Perfect timing. So I can appreciate some of the Easter eggs that they have in this new series, including the intro, which I just love what they did with it. I love that they, you know, they honored it. They used it for the most part. But hey, let's add in these other little elements.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've talked about that, me and Max, how, you know, the ending is very similar to the, it's kind of, it is, it's the best kind of fan service, I think. They change it and alter it just enough without kind of sacrificing it, and like the tune itself. And that was, again, one of Feige's, you know, desires. He was like, we can't do the show without the cast and without the music. We need those things.
Right. Yes. And it was an excellent choice to bring back the original cast where they could.
Absolutely. Some, unfortunately, have passed away. And again, some voices have changed and they've changed roles because of that. And I'm sure we'll talk about the role and one of the returning actors in this episode. But yeah, what did you think of these first three episodes specifically as well?
They were powerful, like, while still being fun. You know, it's like, we're going to deal with some very serious elements here, some serious emotions, but we're still going to do it with color and vibrancy and moments of levity. It's the first time I think I've ever enjoyed seeing Cyclops do things. Like, he is an overrated character to me. And he has all this power to blast. Like, okay, that doesn't make you a good leader just because you have one big gun. You know, it's kind of like the Megatron. Like, how are you the leader? You know?
I always preferred Starscream anyway. That was my preference.
I'm a Soundwave guy myself.
Me too. All right, man.
Soundwave. Okay. I get it. Soundwave there. Fair play. Did you enjoy the previous episode? That was very dark and there was a lot of gothic imagery. I imagine you quite liked that.
Best Jean Grey outfit ever.
Yeah, very.
But it's also tragic. It was traumatic, you know? Like, how are you going to find out that your whole life has been a lie and you don't even know which version of you these things happened, and then your child is taken? I don't know. It was just, did that all happen in 30 minutes?
It did. They are packing a lot in, and they're kind of reducing and condensing a lot of the storylines. You know, for better or for worse, it's a different format. It's a different form of storytelling. I'm sure we'll talk about the kind of reduction of the tail end of this episode. That story has been reduced massively, but I can understand why people have a reverence for that story and how important that story is. Mm-hmm. Again, I won't spoil the actual story just in case you haven't read it, Tonya, or it's going to filter into the next episode. And there's a few kind of Easter eggs I've noticed again, which might spoil something further down the line. If you want to know, message me, because I'm not going to ruin it for Tonya if I can avoid it.
He loves giving spoilers.
I don't love doing it. It's just part of who I am.
Message me so I can spoil things for you. I can't wait. I even have an email address for it.
Yes, I have created an email address based on that. Sorry, I apologize. But yes, we will be going into, this is your Tonya Todd warning, your spoiler warning. So we will be talking about spoilers of this episode. Luckily, she's already watched it, so it's fine. But yeah, we've not heard a lot from Max. So I'm going to let him do the synopsis because Tonya hates doing those.
Well, it's very much an episode of sort of two thirds and one additional third. The Motendo story takes up about 20 minutes, and then the first section of Life Death is sort of the last 10 minutes of the episode. So very briefly, in a nutshell, the Motendo episode, it's Jubilee's 18th birthday. Before they can go out for a day at the mall, the arcades is her request. She's in a bedroom with Roberto, aka Sunspot, and they get, as you do, they get sucked into the video games console by the lovely Mojo, and then they have to play out a very lethal game of sort of a trip down memory lane of various X-Men arcade games and fight to the end and overcome it to be transported back to the real world. And then we'll talk about it shortly, but in the Life Death section, that picks up where last week's episode left off, where Storm is approached in the bar by Forge, who claims he can give her back her lost mutant powers, and we get to see the start of that relationship and their quest to do just that. So in a nutshell, that's what this week's episode was about.
See, completely painless on you. You could have done that. Easy. Easy.
not so well.
I didn't spoil too much there, you know?
No, you didn't. You didn't.
You did great.
Yeah, it's kind of, again, like me and Max have seen some very vague synopses, again, for some of the upcoming episodes. But again, we're keeping steering away from that. A lot of it is just speculation from ourselves. But yeah, let's talk about that first half. So Max, what did you think to the first half of this episode?
I thought it was a very enjoyable romp, and very fun, and lots of great, like, little bits of nuggets of entertaining flashbacks to classic arcade games and loads of Easter eggs in there. But it didn't really, unlike the previous three episodes and the last 10 minutes of this one, it didn't really further the plot of the series along at all, other than at the end bringing Jubilee and Roberto together in a romantic sense. The rest of it was, you know, I don't think we'll ever, in this first season at least, go back into that arcade world. I don't think we'll see Mojo again. So it was just, I think what they did was they might have thought that they had a story here, then realized they only had enough of 20 minutes worth of screen time and thought, shit, we haven't got 30 minutes here. We'll chop off half 10 minutes of Life Death and stick that at the end. So it was a nice concept and it was a lot of fun. I really had a fun time with it. I just didn't feel it served a huge sort of dramatic purpose. But I suppose a bit of levity after three, like you said, Dan, after three pretty hard hitting episodes that are quite involved and quite dark in places as well. Just have a bit of fun for 20 minutes and not have to think too much about it or where it's going. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, is there?
Nothing wrong with having a bit of fun. And yes, me and Max have been talking about this particular episode. I don't think it's my favorite of these first four, but I think where we were and with the team and what was going on, I think we did need a kind of, we've had the kind of the downward trajectory of the characters being stripped. Like, we started at their zenith when they were most powerful, and we're slowly being kind of chipped away, and it's becoming more dark and more tragic. And the idea of struggling being a mutant is quite, you know, right in your face with what they're trying to tell you about these characters and their story. And I think that's good. I think we'll see that we have to have the fall before we have the rise, which I think we'll get in the finale, I'm sure. But I think this was needed. I think we needed kind of just a fun, silly kind of breath of fresh air. You know, whether you like it or not, again, there was some kind of expanding of the relationship between Roberto and his feelings of being like a closeted mutant and Jubilee kind of finding herself and knowing what she needs to do. Like, there will be some people out there who are not a fan of Jubilee, and they'll be like, you know, oh no, guys, it's a Meg episode or it's a Lisa episode. You know, there'll be that kind of contingent of people, and you know, that's fine. You can have your favorite characters and least favorite characters, but I actually thought this one handled it quite well. I agree that I don't think it would have stretched to the full length of the episode, so I think they were right to kind of pull it back a little bit. But then, have we also shortchanged life death by doing that? Maybe, perhaps. I'm not sure. I'm not fully decided on that. But we'll get into our thoughts more so. But Tonya, what do you think to Motendo?
You asked me to do this episode a long time ago, saying that you had previewed the title names.
Mm.
And so I had no idea what to expect. And I sit down and I'm ready to watch. And it's, wait, what? Why am I watching a Jubilee episode and Mojo is my least favorite of all of X-Men? I just cannot stand him. He's awful. Like, why would he want me to watch this? Why does he want to talk to me about this episode? I had presumed that there would be some kind of storm element, or maybe Loki would make an appearance. Like, you know who my characters are. So why am I sitting mm-hmm. through this? So I just kept watching and waiting, wishing for more Roberto, because I think he's kind of a cool character and he's so powerful, and they haven't really shown that yet. They haven't shown just how powerful he could be. And I think they really could have leaned in a little bit more. When they finally did have him use his powers, it was kind of it fell flat. And I was expecting to be like, wow, that was so cool. We've been waiting for this moment. They did the setup, but the payoff wasn't good because it was over very quickly and it still wasn't enough. So I was a little disappointed in that. And I don't hate Jubilee, but she just seems like the least effective of the X-Men. She's always the one that needs to be rescued. It seems like after all of this time, she can't really play that role of, well, we need her to explain all these things, you know, to have a character, an everyman character, so that the audience will understand what is going on, but she can't be that anymore. So what purpose is she serving right now? Because she also isn't a very powerful character. And her power is so inconsistent. Sometimes it's like, there's no way she could have done that. And other times it's, oh no, weak fireworks. How threatening. She doesn't seem to have mastered her power to the point where she is an effective fighter yet. So having her as the protagonist in this one, it's like, all right, where are we going with this? It felt like a filler episode.
Yeah, I think
that is not your favorite. It was my least favorite. Those 20 minutes were my least favorite because the other stuff had more important. You know, I like storyline.
Sure. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think they are doing this episode is a little bit. I don't think it's as advancing the plot, like Max said, as much as the previous episodes have. But there's a little bit of character thing, like Roberto's journey is reflecting Jubilee's original journey when she joined the show, and he's trying to come to terms with who he is and what he is and being outed as a mutant as well. He's like, I don't want to use my powers because mum might see or dad might see.
And I would rather they leaned more into that storyline because it feels important.
Yes.
Whereas her wanting an 18th birthday party, while valid, didn't feel like it was as important as his storyline. And I wish they had just balanced it better.
Yeah, I agree. I think I get her storyline is kind of, she's kind of trying to hold on to her youth and looking back, like all the episodes they say, or the levels in the video game are previous episodes she was in, like the go to Genosha when it was.
And it was a nice callback to those things.
It
did feel like it was, you know, oh, I remember that. And also, there was that video game there's a skating rink here, and it had these old video games. So it's like this vintage video game of X-Men, And it seemed like they were showing that, especially with like the bad graphics and stuff.
Yeah, they had the 420 really well, 420 perspective as well, like an old TV. Or
right. So that part was kind of cool and that was fun. It was the storyline that gave me pause. Like, okay, I get this, but how are we going to use this to fit in with the rest of what is happening? And I think they missed the mark there. They were close, but they missed it.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's her trying to grow up while not wanting to grow up as well. There's a conflict there. And that's when we get towards the end of the show, we see that kind of development and what happens with Jubilee. But I agree. I don't think I would prefer more Sunspot kind of stuff and less kind of Jubilee stuff within this.
Don't you
this?
Think it would have been more effective if Jubilee was the one using her powers, because he wouldn't, and she ended up getting knocked out and almost lost her life, that he had to use his power to blast to save her, get the extra life and save her? That would have been a more climactic moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have carried more weight. Definitely would have been like his big coming out moment and showcasing right. what he can do. I'm sure we'll get that before the end of this run of episodes, but it would have, like you said, Tonya, it would have been the perfect place to do it there and then, I think. But I guess they're keeping us waiting.
Yeah, there might be.
I'm going
to
trust that they have plans. I'm going to trust.
Yeah. Oh, like I said last week, if last week's episode was a like, if the previous first two episodes were like tens, last week was like a 9.5 for me, and then this is maybe an 7.5 for me. So I still enjoyed it for what it was. I loved all the kind of references, like to the X-Men arcade game from 1991, which is heavily influenced by that first cartoon pilot called Pride of the X-Men, because it has the same roster, they have the same costumes. The Sentinels are not the right size, which I love.
like stunted. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I love that. What's another really fun Easter egg is that the car when they fall into the video game, the car they fall on is in Street Fighter, the bonus stage where you have to beat up a car and destroy a car, like wreck it.
Ah, yeah.
The car they fall on is that exact same car that Street Fighter you would punch in the bonus stage, which I thought was a wonderful little addition there. And yeah, there was a lot of kind of lovely little Easter eggs like that. Like you said, Tonya, the callbacks to those episodes like Genosha, like the Savage Land, and I can't remember what the other one was, Asteroid M, of course. You know, there was some really, really nice kind of callbacks as well and kind of influences. Even the Motendo, even the cartridge in the Motendo, is the image on it is a mix of two games that they released for the Sega Genesis or Sega Mega Drive, if you're in the UK and Europe. And it was X-Men, which I think was from 1993, and then the sequel to that game called Clone Wars. It's a kind of a mix of those two. And it's called a Motendo, but it looks like a Sega Genesis or a Mega Drive.
How do you remember the dates of these video games?
Because I looked it up after the show because I went, that looks familiar. Okay. I'll do my research. And it was those kind of video games. So it's kind of a mix of those two kind of artwork images from the top of those video games on that. But yeah, I dug all the kind of the sound effects. I loved hearing the dial-up modem right as they're pulled into the video game. I thought, what a lovely little callback for all these people that are really old and remember dial-up modems when you were probably looking up naughty images and you were trying to keep the noise down and all you could hear was looking around trying to make sure you weren't getting caught by your parents. That was me.
I've no idea what you're talking about, Dan.
Right, course, neither do I.
Oh, sure. But when I was looking up XXX women as opposed to the X-Men, that's what I was doing in my childhood home. But
let's see how much more he reveals, Max.
Yes, I do. I do overshare quite a bit, so I'll keep that to myself. So I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with like Mojo and Mojoverse. I don't know if maybe it's because he's quite, for regular fans of X-Men comics, he's probably not that much of a deep cut. But I think for like the movie fans, they're like, who is this giant spineless fat slug guy? Who is this? So he originated in a miniseries called Longshot, which was created by, I think it was Anne Nesenti, Louise Simonson, who were editing the X-Men books at the time, and then Arthur Adams did the art. So Longshot would eventually become a member of the X-Men. He's not a mutant, he's a genetically modified soldier, and his superpower is basically, much like Domino, is being very lucky for the most part. And he only has three fingers on each hand as well. That's how you know he's genetically modified. Mojo is from a race called the Spineless Ones, and he lives in a universe that he's taken over. And he is basically a sleazy TV executive or movie producer, and is all about the ratings and getting eyes on his content. He is, and he's cheap as well, so he'll kidnap stars and use them. For example, Psylocke once had her eyes pulled out by her Captain Britain villain called the Slaymaster. He kidnapped her and put cybernetic eyes in her skull. And when she joined the X-Men, he just filmed their adventures and then just like showed that on his own TV station and made loads of like got all the kind of power and everything, you know. And he's a kind of a parody or a pastiche on those kind of ideas, those people that run studios. You know, at his worst, he's a kind of Harvey Weinstein. That, you know, at his least, he's, you know, any other kind of movie executive or producer. You know, your Bob Igers or whatever you want to, whoever you want to pick. But that's what he kind of represents. So even though we're not really that political in this episode, there is some kind of satirical elements being, you know, played here. And there's kind of like a, almost like a little bit of an influencer coming in as well, like an Instagram influencer or a TikToker kind of element. I love that he's had a nip and a tuck as well. And it's just like so ridiculous. And then it just, all of the nips and tucks just come undone at the end. And you just see who he truly is, this fat, horrible, greasy monster. I'll leave some links in the show notes for the books if you want to read more up about Mojo and Longshot and all those kind of, and Spiral as well, because we get Spiral in this as well. Some really wonderful out there characters, but a lot of fun. But yeah, they aren't necessarily related to the X-Men, but they were pulled into the universe because there was basically, Longshot had nowhere to go. He was I believe the writer's idea was that they needed a character who wasn't like dark and disturbing, or, you know, it was during the mid 80s, so there was a lot of like Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen comics coming out, so these writers were like, you know, we need somebody who's just having a good time and enjoying themselves and, you know, is fun and carefree. And that's why they wrote that character and created that character and then gave him Spiral and Mojo as a nemesis as well, because they were critiquing that world as well, probably the world of comics and publishing houses as well at the same time.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. Yeah, and one thing I did like as well, as well as the arcade side and the fun, was that very brief 2 or 3 minutes right at the top of the episode around the breakfast table, and that dynamic with Magneto and Gambit competing for the affections of Rogue, where Gambit's like, hey, let me, you know, give you some cream for your coffee, but Magneto's already moving the spoons with his ability and doing it for her. It's like he might as well be like literally stood with his arm around her like, no, this is my woman, not yours. There was just some really cool sort of deadpan one-liners from Magneto in there as well, and there's a line where, you know, Jubilee makes an offhand comment about makes an offhand comment about, oh, you know, he's miserable because he can get a pony for his 18th birthday off his parents, and he sort of deadpan goes, my parents perished when I was very young, albeit we know how, in what horrific circumstances his parents perished, but just that way it's delivered is just a really dark, bleak comedy, and I thought it was really cleverly done, actually.
Yeah, Morph's facial expression when they realize what they've said is phenomenal. I love that.
Yeah, because they all know his background, so it's like, oh, what have I said? You know,
and clearly the show doesn't want to like bring up or name the Holocaust, but that's what's heavily implied. And Forge has a line later which is implying his history as well, without explicitly saying or aging the character as well. But yeah, that's a wonderful, it reminds me of those early kind of Avengers comics in the 60s where some of the best moments is them just, you know, kicking the shit and just kind of having dinner and talking and just, yeah, not non-superhero stuff, which is, you know, some of my favorite moments in the entire kind of catalog of Marvel's history, like in Age of Ultron, where they're having the party and they're all just like talking about who can pick up the hammer and things like that. Those for me are just quintessential moments, away from the superheroics.
Yeah, it's seeing them doing their own thing, isn't it? It's real life interactions, and it's showing the dynamics and the way people can, you know, these people we put on pedestals can still say the most stupid of things and put the foot in it like the rest of us do on a regular basis, you know?
Mm. Yes, I put my foot in it last week. I want to apologize again. I apologized on social media, but I misgendered Morph last week. So I just wanted to say sorry about that. It was not intentional. I think I did it many times in the space of 2 minutes. So I really do apologize for that. And yeah, I just wanted to say that again off the top and just be aware and you know, acknowledge my mistake. But I still love the character of Morph, and they are one of my favorites in this show and continue to be as well, including this episode especially. But yeah, what do we think to the reveal of Abyssa, the future version of Jubilee? Not a future version. In the comics, it's a future version. But in this, it's a digital clone of her that is used to test the game, like a beta test. What do we think of that character and her reintroduction or introduction, shall we say, Tanya?
Well, the voice was pretty cool.
It was. So it's Alison Court. We mentioned on the first episode that Alison Court would be returning. She decided to, because she is not of Asian descent, she decided to give up the role and said somebody of Asian descent should play this character. And it's Folly Chu is now playing her. And they are like best buds now, the two actresses, which I love. And there's pictures of them at the premiere and stuff. And I love that they still brought her back to play the role and acknowledge her and what she meant to so many, and the voice and her character and everything. I thought that was a really nice way of honoring her while still stepping away and making that change for a new generation of fans.
Yeah, I agree. I appreciate that she did that. I think it was a nice touch to have her just come do a little cameo like that to honor the work that she did do. And just on that note, these episodes, I know we're talking about this in particular, but it reminded me of something that I appreciate about the 97 version, you know, X-Men 97 version, is that they have really leaned into expressing the differences in their ethnicities in a way that they didn't in the original, where it was just like, everyone is actually white, we're just going to tint them differently. And now they are using specific characteristics of different ethnicities without being caricatures, without it being stereotypes, but they are allowing the characters to show who they are and what their backgrounds are through the drawing. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, wonderful. I think you and I discussed, I think I sent you a link from Alison Seeley Smith was interviewed, and she said that there was some definite colorism going on with the early episodes with Storm. She was lighter, had a lighter skin tone, but now she has her kind of skin tone from the comics, which she really, really appreciated.
Right. She was dark in the comics. Like, she was an actual black woman. It was okay. She wasn't just like slightly brown, you know?
I read somewhere recently as well, like, that actually they brought in a white woman to voice her originally, and then the showrunners were like, what are you doing? Like, that, I think the casting director was like, oh, it's just the voice. And they were like, no, it needs to be a black woman voicing a black woman, actually.
And her voice is everything to this character. That was the one thing. It's like, I didn't know which voices returned because I didn't know the reasons at first. Like, when I first started, I had heard that only some of the voices were coming back, but I didn't know the reasons why. Mm. And watching that, it was like, oh my God, it was, thank you God that it was her voice, because it really would have bothered me. She's so dramatic and so fierce in everything she says. I had a friend who used to joke around that she would be at the dinner table, please pass the butter, you know?
The mistress of the elements commands it.
Right. So if they had some lesser voice, and I'm not saying a white voice, just anybody other than her.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Any other voice would have been lesser. That is a huge part of what made this character work so well on screen.
Absolutely. She wasn't the original voice of Storm, but she's the one I hear, because she did it from then on in, she was Storm.
Right.
I think they used her in video games as well, like Marvel vs. Capcom and a few others. But yeah, iconic. I couldn't imagine anybody else playing that role specifically. But however, I do think the new actors, especially the one playing Cyclops, are and Gambit are absolutely killing it. But again, there's reasons for those, and Magneto as well, and there's a new voice of Forge, which I think is a good time for us to talk about the life death section. I think, unless there's anything we want to say about Motendo, Max, at all, anything else you want to mention?
Not particularly. I mean, just to reiterate what I said and what everyone said, really, that it feels very filler. It's but not to say it doesn't have its merits and it's not entertaining. Of course it is. But it's very, you know, it's the most forgettable 20 minutes out of the sort of 2 hours worth of footage we've had over these four episodes. It's very throwaway. But you can't help but have a good time with it. But I think the real sort of stuff to grab a hold of is in these last 10 minutes now with Life Death. It's night and day, really, you know, in the way it's executed, the way it's written, the weight, the gravitas. There's you know, it may be complete opposite ends of the spectrum, I think.
Agreed. Anything else you'd like to say, Tonya?
No, I just want to appreciate it for what it gave us, the callbacks to the enjoyable moments. So it on its own wasn't amazing, but it did call back to some amazing moments. And I will enjoy those.
I liked the cameo of Sauron, one of my favorite X-Men villains, purely from the show, really, not anywhere else. It was his character was created because they couldn't use werewolves at the time. There was the comics code. So they were like, well, I can't create a werewolf. When I want to tell a werewolf story, what shall I do? Pterodactyl Man. That's what I'll do. And there's a reference in that because his name is Carl Lycos, like lycanthropy, which, and again, he names himself after the Lord, you know, the evil one in Lord of the Rings. I say they pronounce it in the show as Sauron because it's like he's a dinosaur man. So and I kind of still pronounce it that way. You can say Sauron if you want. I don't mind. But I guess it kind of differentiates themselves from Lord of the Rings as well. So Sauron, that's what I say. But again, pronounce it how you like. But yeah, I love that cameo. I liked that they had the Days of Futures Past poster behind them as well when they were fighting. Another lovely little nod. And then also, I like the reference to Dazzler. He was like, I was going to hire Dazzler, but she added him. Again, brilliant.
Which is wonderful. Just acknowledging the whole Jubilee Dazzler thing. You guys are essentially the same thing, but people like Dazzler more.
Wonderful. There's a. I think it, I can't remember the group online, but there's a video of Dazzler in the video game. They use the video game to create an original cartoon, and they're like, and like she gets to Magneto, and he's like, "Who are you?" And she's like, "I'm Dazzler," and he's like, "Get out! Who are you? You're not. Where's Cyclops? Where's Wolverine? Where's Colossus? I'll fight him." And it's like,
"Give me a real opponent here."
Yeah, he's like, "No, now you have to face Dazzler, who is." Is quite powerful, actually. But yeah, no, I just love that little kind of reference and nod. But I'm a fan. I know he's not your favorite, but I'm a fan of Mojo and his kind of like the wacky ideas behind him and his dialogue. I thought the new actor, again, another new actor playing Mojo was excellent for the time he had.
He was.
But yeah, I thought it was fun. And again, it was lighthearted. It was a nice breath of fresh air. Again, I prefer the previous episodes, but I did have fun with it regardless. But yeah,
there was no Omega level threat detected moment.
There was no tweetable, retweetable, TikTokable, Instagrammable moment. Absolutely not. But I like the reference to something else that I love, which was that arcade game, which was a lot of fun. But yeah,
here's the thing: in the other episodes, there's always something where it's like, "Oh, rewind! I need to see that again." You know, but there's nothing like that in this.
And normally I rewatch the episodes as well. Like when I get home from work before we record, I tend to watch them and I kind of didn't feel the need to. I felt like I was like, I remember it for the most part. But yeah, I agree with you guys. It's not my favorite, but I still had fun. But anyway, before we run out of time, we must talk about Life Death. So this is the reason I brought Tonya on, because I knew the title Life Death is the story of Storm. It's a very kind of seminal story in her kind of character arc and in her history. I didn't know how much we would get because I knew it was split in half with something like this. But unfortunately, Tonya, I'm away for part two. I'm not going to be here. So it'll be up to Dave and Max if they'll have you back on. I'll let them organize that if they want you back or if they've had enough of you already.
Yes. I like how you put them on the spot. So your listeners will be like, oh, I mean,
clearly you have an affinity for the character. You cosplay as her. And again, you've talked about your love for that character. And I feel like to kind of close off the book. But again, that's down to Dave and Max to organize. I'll be away, but I'll definitely send in my thoughts and feelings on the episode. But Tonya, because of this, what did you feel to this storyline and the kind of burgeoning relationship between Forge, the man who can make everything, and Storm now without her kind of purpose in life?
Well, you know, I'm a Loki girl. And I was already aware of a storyline where she did not have her powers, because I think I told you that the first novel that I ever wrote was based on a dream I had about Storm and Loki. And I started writing what I guess was going to become some sort of fan fiction. I just wasn't that familiar with the term yet. And so I was writing that, and in doing so, I started doing some research and found out there is already a Storm and Loki love story written by Chris Claremont. And so I read that, and, you know, that's how I learned about the Young Avengers, and just this, it's like a side story in the Young Avengers, but it really has to do with Loki kind of enchanting Storm and coaxing her to Asgard to be his queen, and giving her a fleece so that she can fly again, and giving her her own hammer so that she can command the elements again. So he's wooing her with these the gifts of her power that she lost. And so when she lost her power in these early episodes, it was like, oh, they could be leading up to Loki. They probably won't, but I will hold out hope. And as soon as I saw Forge in the previous episode, I was like, ah, oh, they're not going to do the Loki episode.
They might get there. You never know. They might get there. It could happen. Yeah, you're talking about the X-Men Asgardian Wars, which, Loki was a key figure in that storyline. I'll link that in the show notes as well if anyone wants to read that. But yeah, another great story. This definitely happened in the comics, and this happened prior to that as well. So it's, again, part of the comics canon.
Gutted when I saw it on screen. It was like, oh my gosh, I know that this happens, but I didn't want to see it, you know? Because it's painful, and she's just such an amazing character, and she is so powerful as a teammate. You definitely want her on your side. So for her to be taken out like this, I mean, I'm sure there it's just so complex, because how did they ever expect her to stay? She needs a moment. She's who she is has been taken from her. Not to mention everything she used to feel. It's kind of like when someone develops a disability. You need some time and some space to deal with this new version of yourself. And you don't need all of these people who still have everything and expecting you, you know, like, we're just here to make you cheer up. No, that's not what I need right now. Mm-hmm. So they're dealing with a lot of different complexities, and it was hard to watch. That said, it will bother me if her powers are restored too easily, because I care about the storyline, and I like the growth that she goes through in the comics. So I'm a little concerned that they're making it. I shouldn't say I'm concerned. I think I'm going to trust them that they are going to try, and it's not going to magically be fixed by the next episode. I feel like it's going to take time, and there are going to be failures. But they have to honor her by showing her character growth and how powerful she becomes without her powers, her mutant.
Yeah, absolutely. You were saying at the start that it's more about her character that draws you to her, not powers. So I think this is quite an interesting storyline and moment to go with to kind of understand and learn how powerful she is without them, you know, because she's kind of taken them for granted. Now they're gone. You know, she's effectively lost a limb, which obviously relates to Forge, who does not have a hand. He does not have, does not have a leg. He lost them in the comics of his Vietnam.
And he's still rocking those booty shorts, huh?
He is. Yeah. Well, I mean, he's
those are some short shorts. Yeah.
They are like very, very, like almost like Gene Kotoff's kind of thing. Like really
he's
kind of
confident, you know? Yeah.
But I think, like he says, he was bitter and he was twisted by the loss of those things and the loss of his fellow soldiers. I can't remember exactly what happens, but there's a bit. He's a sorcerer as well, which comes into play with the the villain of this particular piece, the adversary, which I'll talk about. I don't want to, again, spoil the comics a little bit for Tonya if she's not read them, but there is links there. I'll say you need to read Fall of the Mutants. That's what you need to read if you want to learn about the adversary and Forge and Storm. The kind of zenith of that storyline comes there.
And I wasn't familiar with the character, but I do know some Native American lore, and when I saw that owl, I was like, that is not a good thing.
No
something bad is about to happen.
Yeah,
that is very creepy, and like, that is an omen right there. And it definitely was.
Yeah. What do you think to the life death section so far, Max, as well?
I really liked it. I think it's, like I said before, it's the highlight of the episode without question. There's some really nice little callbacks as well in Forge's laboratory / dining room, whatever it is. On the wall there's a picture of him with the X-Factor lineup from the original TV show. There's a picture of him with Dr. Adler as well.
Yes,
when he later on the episode, when he comes clean about, you know, it was his designs that, you know, were
collars
reverse engineered for the collars and the, you know, the technology to strengthen the powers. And he's
who's the guy in the purple suit that's kind of hidden, like
who is it? Well, do you want to know? Because I don't know if this is going to give away something.
I want to know who the character is, yes.
Right, so they're hiding his face, but that is Bastion. So so Forges, as like he says in the episode, I've worked with the government, I've developed things for the government, anti-mutant weaponry. He's worked for Guy Rick, he has worked for Valerie Cooper, who have both appeared in this episode, in this series so far. Yeah. So he has links. He's a bit ambiguous. He's been a villain, he's been a hero. You know, there's some dark stuff going on with him as well. But that is Bastion. So Bastion was the human face of the Operation Zero Tolerance, it was called, which I don't know if that's going to play into the theme of the show, which we believe is tolerance is extinction, which Guy Rick says at the beginning in the first episode. But yeah, he developed basically sleeper agents, so humans who actually didn't know they were racist sentinel robots. So it's kind of almost like systemic racism to a degree. They don't know how racist they actually are because it's just ingrained in them. So they can emerge at any point. So anybody could be a mutant hunting robot. So that was the storyline that they played with. And I listed that in my top five Sentinel comics a few years back, which I've linked as well, the podcast. So,
Max, what were you saying? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. It was just, I needed to know who that guy was.
You needed to know spoilers, Tonya. So unlike you.
Stop. I didn't ask for his name. I didn't ask for his backstory.
Okay. I'm giving you a little bit. I've not said everything. That's all.
Yeah. There was also, talking about the shorts as well, there's a lovely picture of, who has a picture of themselves on the wall doing like a catalogue pose?
Right.
With the short shorts. So like, you know, like this, gazing across the beach or something, a picture. Like, who has a picture of themselves like that? You know, that is confidence for you, isn't it?
I've met people who just have themselves on their phone wallpaper, their screensaver. I won't name them, but yeah, I've met people like that. Definitely. Yeah. I had one friend, no longer friends with him, but he had a picture of him and his partner in the shower. It was just a picture of them kind of. And I went to a party and they had two of those. One was on the fridge and one was on the wall. And I was like, why do we need to see not only that once, but twice in your?
That's weird.
Yeah, he was a weird fella. Again, not really friends anymore, but again, won't go into that. But yeah, I did like those little nods. I liked that he talked about the process of how he creates things in his head, because that's a very unusual power to kind of represent and to show and to describe, to be able to create anything you want. Like, can you just solve things like, you know, entirely, always, and very quickly.
Does he have any experience with Mr. Fantastic, with Reed Richards?
Not that I know of.
Like, they could create some amazing things together.
I feel like in one of the more recent Iron Man runs that he hired Forge as one of his kind of workers, I think, or as one on his staff, I believe. But yeah, he's had an interesting run of stories, kind of up and down, I'd say, as a run. But yeah, I don't think they've actively worked together, as far as I'm aware. But if I'm wrong, you know, nerds out there, tell me I'm wrong. I want to know that. I want to read that story. But yeah, Max, sorry, we interrupted what you were saying, but carry on.
Oh, it's all right. Yeah, but I mean, booty shorts aside on the wall. It's an interesting one because you do get the sense that this is a man on he's on a path of atonement, isn't he? You know, there is. We speculated last week, didn't we, that he might have some kind of sinister ulterior motive because of, you know, his foot in sort of murky government waters. But here it does seem to be that those days are past him and he's genuine. Maybe he's not. Maybe there is more than meets the eye. But you do get the sense that he's genuinely sorry for his creations being twisted and used in such a way. And now he's genuinely trying to atone for it. I mean, it's very weird how granted Storm is a prize, but he does seem to have fallen for her in literally no time at all. Because in the previous episode, they had never met. He had to introduce himself to her. In the context of the original series, I don't believe the characters ever crossed paths either. So they'd never met yet within, I don't know how much time is supposed to have elapsed in between them meeting at the bar and the context of this episode, but how he's fallen for Storm in such short order, I don't quite understand the timeline there.
Par for the course with the Marvel universe. Look at how many people have been with her. Doctor Doom fell in love with her. Loki fell in love with her. There was an
Dracula.
Episode.
Dracula fell in love with her.
I know.
she married Black Panther, of course. Black Panther.
Right.
Was Queen of Wakanda, yeah.
Yeah. Was with Wolverine for a time as well.
Yeah. It just seems that's the thing that happens. And so I accepted it because the funny thing is it's so many villains, too.
It is.
They're like, all right, but she's different and I want that one. And yet they can't have her because she's good.
I get it. I can fall in love with Storm. I have fallen in love with Storm, the character and everything. I remember the book being
cheekbones, right?
Exactly. All of it. The whole package. Like you know, Forge says, you are a goddess even without your abilities. But again, like that's him. He's got there's some very complex emotions going through Forge in this.
While
he's
making
this.
Dinner for her and, you know, just pretty much courting her.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
From dawn till dusk.
And I think what happens in the comics is he's there when she gets shot with the weapon, the energy weapon, and then takes her and kind of, you know, resuscitates her and brings her back and kind of is trying to convince her that life is still worth living because she's kind of suicidal. She's not getting out of bed. She's depressed. She's not eating. And there's like moments where he's literally like shaking her, like, you've got to snap out of it. This is life. And again, he's relating his own story back to her and what he went through and that connection. But we learn as well that he invented the weapon. So it's almost like he's trying to redeem himself and trying to rid himself of his own guilt. But while doing that, is also falling in love with her as well. And she's doing the same. And she says, you know, you've made me out to be a fool because you're trying to
fashioned a fool.
Oh, yeah, I love that. And again, like that idea that and she challenges him. She said, like, how could you trust a government? You know what your government does. And she kind of refers to the way that Indigenous people have been treated in the past and the fact that he's created bonds and shackles for his own people, speaking about mutants specifically. Like, and he's like, you don't dare talk to me like that. You can't understand what I've been through, what I've done.
He had that slap coming.
Yeah, I agree. But it's almost like he's doing it he's not falling in love like selflessly, or he wants to, you know, he wants to be with her because she's beautiful and wonderful in so many ways.
It seems like both are true to me.
Yeah, but I think there's like Storm is seeing it in the opposite way, that he wants to free himself of guilt.
Not accepting it. Like, everybody falls in love with me. Look,
yeah.
I'm seeing the root of this and you're not special in this way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then we, like you said, like I love that moment where she's like, the wind is wrong and it only blows this way and it should change and alter.
Right.
Which is almost implying that she is still has very like low level version of her power. Like, she can sense that. Like, I think maybe, you know, a normal person would be able to sense that, but I feel like it's still there within her.
These are things that are foremost in her mind. It's something that she pays attention to in a way that others would not.
Yeah. And I think we forget as well with mutant powers, you think, oh, cool, you can shoot lightning and fly and stuff like that. But, you know, it's integral to who you are and how you interact with the world, how you who you are as well. Like, you know, they always talk about like the cure and this and curing that and curing, you know, there's no need to be a cure. This is who we are. This is what we do.
And that's something that she says frequently. She's usually the one to say, don't give up your gift.
Like X-Men 3, The Last Stand, Halle Berry says that to Rogue and then Hank saying, you know, I'm blue and, you know, it's not quite the same. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got cool powers, minus, you know, sucking the life out of my boyfriend in a mutant way, not in a sexy way. You know, so yeah, it's one of those. But I thought that all of the dialogue here was gorgeous and beautiful and felt like almost like a proper this isn't a proper TV show, but it felt like a drama like you would see somewhere. And
even the storytelling they did through the colors, like that whole video game episode was so vibrant. Like there are so many bright colors in that. And then we get here and we get just the darkness and the muted colors and the shadows, and it changed the whole tone of the story that, you know, the stories that we were watching. Like, this is fun. It's just exciting. Primary colors. And here we have the darkness with bits of light in it. Mm. Because you see her outfit, it's still kind of reminiscent of her uniform. Mm. It's all white. And I've never seen anyone look so good in overalls, you know?
And she was wearing her punk outfit, which I thought maybe we could see a little bit more of. I love that kind of punk aesthetic. Yeah. I know not a lot of people like it, but I kind of have a soft spot for it. It's the same with like Magneto's outfit. I don't particularly like it visually, but I like what it represents, what he's trying to do with himself and
They're both rocking their unusual outfits.
Yeah, I like that. You know, it's something different. And yeah, absolutely. Do we feel like this particular... Because this is told in the comic over a full issue, like this whole revelation and everything and them kind of separating and falling in love and everything is told over that full issue. And again, with comics, obviously you can go back and forth to the pages. You can take your time. You can reread it. Do we feel this particular story, this particular thing was rushed at all, maybe, or wasn't given the time it needed to breathe?
A little bit, yeah. To go from A to B to C in less than 10 minutes of screen time, I suppose, is quite quick. I mean, I'm grateful that there's going to number six episode is going to be a whole 30 minutes dedicated to this storyline. So maybe we'll see a bit more. But the relationship did shift. I mean, I don't know how long, like I said before, I don't know what the timeline is, how long it's set over. Is the start when they're having the bison chili, and then the conclusion of the episode with the adversary, is that set over a few days, or is it literally within the space of one day? But it does, they did cram a lot in, and the sort of shifting scale of their relationship as well. But I do think over the whole piece, it did work. I think, you know, it was incredibly engaging and you buy into it. There's an authenticity, I think, between the two characters' interaction. It didn't, although, you know, this is an animated Marvel cartoon we're watching, but it felt very real. You know, you're stripping it down to, you're taking away the fantasy element and the superpowered element, and it's just two people talking, essentially, and talking about, you know, in one case, the sins of this man's past, and this woman who's broken and trying to piece back to her a sense of self-worth and a sense of self-identity. And it just really felt like an authentic exchange between two people. So maybe I'm wrong in what I was saying before about how quick he sort of confessed his undying love for her. Maybe I was a bit harsh there. I think you can kind of buy the fact that the two people kind of entwined together because of where they're both coming from, two sides of the scale, but both with problems. So to come together, I guess it does make a bit of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Tonya?
Well, to what Max just said, they're isolated right now. So they're spending a lot of time together. It stands to reason that they would feel an intimacy toward each other, even if it's just a friendship. But they're also very attractive people. Like, he's rocking his cheekbones too. I'm not particularly a fan of the mustache, but you can see there's an attractive man there, and he's well built. And I don't think that she is broken. I think
in more ways than one, he's well built.
Seriously. This is why you like the Motendo episode.
I do. That is why I like that. Oh, dear.
So I didn't read this particular series, so I don't know if it's rushed. I don't know if there's a lot more that they are not sharing to the screen that I would feel robbed if I had read it. But it felt believable, and like they're just the dinner conversation that was showing that they have a friendship, they have developed a relationship, and the care that he's taking to feed her.
Yes.
Because, and maybe this is because I believe in the love languages, and acts of service are a huge love language for me anyway. That's what he's doing. He is taking care of her. He is tending to his flower. He is nourishing her, all the while trying to build this machine to restore her powers to her. So to me, his love was immediately apparent, and I didn't need him to actually say it. I felt it immediately.
Yeah, I agree. Again, I think that might be a callback again, because she was not eating. In the comic, she's refusing to eat or get out of bed. So maybe that's again because he was bringing her food. I will say I have read the comic, has been a few years, but it is very much just two people talking through the 20 issues. There's no superpowers. There's no kind of, you know, again, this, you know, this exciting kind of, you know, like we had in Motendo's, none of those visuals. It's literally just character. The most interesting visual, he lives in a place called Eagle Plaza that he designed, and he can turn all the kind of floors and walls invisible. So it's like a holographic, it's like you're standing on air, and she says, please turn that off, because I used to do this myself and now I no longer can. So please turn the floors back on. And he goes, okay, of course. And that was one of my favorite moments in this, is when they try and restore her powers. And again, the wonderful flowery Shakespearean language that Storm always uses. And there's so much power and gusto behind them. Usually the fact that she's trying and it's not working, it's slowly just kind of, you can just feel her break inside. The more she tries, the more it breaks her. And I thought that was really powerful, especially. But we've slowly run out of time. So is there anything else we want to say about the episode Motendo or Life Death at all before we come to a close?
Well, let's just briefly touch on the ending. I mean, it's a very, again, this season has been fantastic for cliffhanger endings. Every single episode has ended on something where you're like, oh, I can't wait for next week. And this week was no exception. Like you talked at the top of the episode about the adversary, and we get the appearance of the adversary seemingly coming to feast, metaphorically speaking, on Storm. Quite a striking entrance, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It definitely was.
They've definitely redesigned the character. The character looks a lot different in the comic, but I actually prefer the redesign. I think the redesign is more interesting visually. And, you know, I love creepy animals and like horror movies. There's a lot of horror imagery here. Again, like I love the previous episode, so this for me is spot on redesign. I like that it's Alison Seeley Smith's voice as well, so it's Storm's voice kind of reflecting. And again, I think that will show in Forges, kind of we're going to see his inner workings and inner dialogue through that, and the demon speaking in her voice might have an effect on him maybe in the next episode. Well, it's not the next episode, it's the episode after. So again, when I'm not here, while I'm on holiday in Mallorca sunning myself, I won't be able to be here with you guys live, unfortunately, but I'm very much looking forward
to it. Because it's virtual, so it seems like you would be able to.
Maybe I could. Maybe I also kind of want a holiday from podcasting as well. To be fair, I think you can't be here.
You're choosing.
I'm making the choice.
There's nothing wrong with
Anya. Stop pointing out my inadequacies and my lies. You're just like Storm. I'm Forge. You're Storm.
A higher standard, like, yes. You are going to have to elevate to the level where I see you rather than
I'll make myself accountable. I'm making the choice to not be here, but luckily Dave Horrocks with a big X is coming to replace me, much like Magneto did with Xavier. He's going to replace me for a few episodes.
Oh, is he going to wear the outfit?
I hope so. And well, he's got more hair than me. He's definitely got more hair than me, so that helps. But yeah, he's great. And
Magneto has a great head of hair, doesn't he?
He does. He really does. And a great bod for a guy in his 80s, 70s or 80s in this.
Yeah.
But yeah, another. You know, not our favorite episode, but one we've appreciated. Anything else we want to say about the adversary or the ending?
Just can't wait to see what happens next.
Me too.
So yeah.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to the next episode as well. I think I have a feeling I might know where it goes, but no spoilers. But I'll leave all those links to all those wonderful comics, Asgardian Wars and Operation Zero Tolerance and all the other ones I've mentioned below. And you should read them because they're good. But Tonya, you are our guest, and where can people find you and all the wonderful things you are doing?
Well, I am across social media at Ms. Tonya Todd. My website is MsTonyaTodd.com. I'm a co-host on Femme On, where I talk about active activism and Femme On fitness, though I haven't done much of the fitness this year. I am getting back to it. And I think that's it for now.
Yeah, that's good. That's more than enough. That's more than enough, I think. I'm sure you'll pick up. I've not been doing any fitness for many years, really. So I understand where you're coming from.
Likewise.
But yes, anything else you want to say, Max? Again, I can link all the social media stuff. Don't worry.
Yeah, just to reiterate, I think it was, again, the standard's so high that I think anything less than top notch seems like a little bit of a dip, but I think still, you know, it's again, a really entertaining episode, two really opposite sort of sections in terms of tone and flavor. But you know, variety is a spice of life. So whilst I think the second part is vastly outweighs the first, I think the first still has its charm, doesn't it? So yeah, I think we've been well served again this week, 4 out of 4.
Yeah, there you go. And yeah, it's been great. And it's even better to have Tonya on and to talk about her love for the characters and everything. So I'm very blessed. Thank you for making the time, Tonya. And we've not had much luck with guests recently, so I'm so glad that you finally made it yourself.
You.
So we do appreciate it. Much as I love talking with Max, it's always nice to get, again, a breath of fresh air, a nice cool breeze that's come into the podcast. So thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, we will see you next time on Examining X-Men 97. Bye. Doodle 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 dood